workshop, the Phenology Investigations, which took place in Spicer. So much more Phenology talkbacks to come. And of course, in between, I will have my Phenology show coming up in about 20 minutes. So stay tuned for that. Right now, it's time to tell you that this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Coming up, we'll have local news with the Up North Report. We heard from Bonnie from Helga Township. She sent a photo of a turtle in the grass, saying not sure if she found a place to lay her eggs or not yesterday on Black Duck Lake. Really big turtle. And then Susan from Cotton weighing in this morning. We add in an ageratum purple flowering plant to our front sun garden because the lady at the nursery said you couldn't keep the bees off of it. We've been adding a lot of bee attracting plants to our yard, but the bees can't get to it as a monarch butterfly is basically living on it. We had not heard of this plant before, but we're having a blast watching the monarch.
Wonderful. And we're going to be talking about bees and wasps mm-hmm. that use trees coming up in the 8 o'clock hour at 8:40 this morning.
Yeah, learning about something called a bee atlas.
Yes.
Citizen Scientist project.
So stay tuned for that as well. We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A Saginaw man died in a motorcycle crash Friday night near Twig. The St. Louis County Sheriff's Office identified him as 56-year-old William Helgemau. In a news release, the Sheriff's Office says the motorcycle was eastbound on Industrial Road and failed to navigate a left-hand turn, overturning in a ditch. Helgemau was pronounced dead at the scene. The Black Duck City Council has agreed to disband its police force. The council unanimously rescinded an ordinance that established a police force in favor of a contract with the Beltrami County Sheriff's Office last week. Councilmember Lori Hamilton made the motion during the June 8th meeting, as much as she said she hated to see the Black Duck Police Department go.
We can't just let it sit stagnant either, and it's kind of where we're at. I loved having a person here. I loved it for the kids. It built a better community.
The city had budgeted for a full-time police chief and a full-time patrol officer for years, but the positions had lately been filled only part-time by Beltrami County Sheriff's deputies. The council hosted a public hearing on the pending decision in March, with presentations from the sheriff's office. The council also discussed what terms they would like to see in the contract, the presence of sheriff's deputies in the schools and at the Black Duck branch of the Bemidji Area Boys and Girls Club, and next steps for Black Duck's owned police vehicles. The current and former Minnesota state flags are now flying in Itasca County. Megan Buffington has more.
The Itasca County Board decided last month to fly both flags after 3 weeks of consideration. County Administrator Brett Skiles initially told the board the county would need to order two new flagpoles, but the flags ended up being displayed above Northeast 5th Street and what was the Sheriff's Office entrance on the backside of the county offices. Skiles says it was his decision to fly the flags there. The poles were previously used as part of a memorial that has since been moved to the city's main intersection. So did the county end up spending any money on this?
Not a penny, nope.
The former state flag remains on display in the back corner of the county boardroom.
Board never discussed that flag, so it's just staying where it is.
Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
Flock Safety's network of automatic license plate readers continues to spread across northern Minnesota. The Brainerd Dispatch reports the Crow Wing County Sheriff's Office installed 10 of the AI-assisted cameras within the last year, with plans to install more in the near future. According to Minnesota Department of Public Safety records, Itasca County has 19 such devices, and the Paul Bunyan Drug Task Force installed 10 more around the Bemidji area within the last year, bringing its total to 22. The dispatch reports Crow Wing County shares its Flock data with all other users within the Flock system and is, quote, looking to limit their shared data to only other agencies in the state. Flock has contracts with law enforcement agencies across the country, including at the federal level. Minnesota statute requires data from license plate readers to only be shared within the state, plus other stipulations about how long data can be stored. The readers operate by snapping photos of vehicles and license plates each time they pass. State statute prohibits agencies from keeping the data longer than 30 days unless the photos are part of an investigation. The license plates recorded are compared with agency hot lists maintained by the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which could include stolen vehicles and vehicles connected with Amber Alerts. In the eastern U.S., where these cameras have been in play for many years, cities and towns are making moves to end contracts like these over concerns about rights to privacy. Flock Safety has come under intense scrutiny in Illinois over violations of the state's data sharing laws, with instances of immigration authorities accessing Illinois readers, as well as out-of-state agencies pursuing women seeking abortions in states where it's still legal. The Red Lake County baseball team adds another trophy to its shelf. The defending Class A state champions claimed second at this year's tournament. The Rebels fell to the number one seed Medelia on Monday at Target Field. Fellow Northland Class A team Southridge finished the tournament in fourth. Grand Rapids earned consolation runner-up in the 3A tournament. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. And sign up for the Buzz newsletter for the week's best stories and audio from this community radio station. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is People Powered KAXE. Coming up, we'll have more from National Public Radio. We'll learn about President Trump at the G7. Stay tuned for that. And some more World Cup coverage.
We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Partly sunny skies today, high 67 to 72, chance of showers tonight, temperatures in the mid-40s to low 50s.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadil in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. It's President Trump's first full day at the G7 summit.
Qatar and the UAE are not part of that group, but their top officials will be meeting with Trump today, key stakeholders to the deal he just came to with Iran. But as much as the European members of the G7 want the war to end, they are just as focused on getting Russia to negotiate an end to its war in Ukraine.
NPR's White House correspondent Daniel Kurtzleben is here. So, Daniel, what has the president done so far at the conference?
Well, yesterday he met with French President Emmanuel Macron, and this morning he and other G7 leaders met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. And while Iran has understandably gotten a lot of attention in the run-up to this summit, leaders at the G7 have been eager to talk Ukraine. Just this week, Russia fired dozens of missiles at Ukraine, killing 11 and sparking a fire on one of Ukraine's religious landmarks. And that all just came hours after Trump spoke to Russian President Vladimir Putin and Zelensky. And ahead of the G7, amid all that, EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said one goal would be to increase the pressure on Russia in order to get Putin to negotiate. But of course, the topic of Iran will be central at this G7 meeting as well. Like you said, Trump will meet with leaders from Qatar and the UAE, both of which had targets Iran attacked during this war. And then after all that, there's a bigger meeting between G7 leaders and Middle Eastern leaders.
So what's the reaction been to the Iran deal there at the G7?
Well, Macron praised it in brief remarks yesterday, calling the agreement important in that it deals with the nuclear issue. But of course, we don't know how that will shake out in further U.S.-Iran talks. It's also possible that the leaders of G7 countries, that's a group that includes Canada, the U.K., France, Germany, Italy, and Japan, that they're going to praise Trump this week, even while they're pretty frustrated with him. I mean, this war did hurt their economies, after all. And additionally, we did see Trump get upset when some European countries didn't help out with the war to his liking, such as allowing the U.S. to use their airspace. But zooming out, as our colleague Franco Ordonez has reported, Trump's repeated antagonism toward European nations, whether it's regarding NATO or Greenland or tariffs, it's pushed those countries together, making them more willing to just kind of band together and push back against the U.S., like with Iran, for example. And Macron has been one of the louder European voices calling for those nations to be a little more independent from the U.S.
All right, so what's left on President Trump's G7 agenda?
Well, in addition to those meetings he still has planned, there are other big topics the White House says it wants to talk about, like AI regulation, the Ebola outbreak in Africa, and critical minerals. Beyond that, Trump has a private dinner with Macron before he leaves at the Palace of Versailles, no less, which seems like it'll be the kind of spectacle Trump really enjoys. But altogether, he just seems to have come into this summit feeling like he has a better hand because of the Iran breakthrough. But there are still a lot of challenges to discuss, not to mention he's just not been on the best of terms with a handful of leaders here. As for news, one more thing, there is the possibility of more news from Trump at the end of this trip, because often at this type of summit, the president does take questions right before he leaves.
All right, that's NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
European leaders have publicly congratulated Trump on reaching a deal with Iran, but they also are reserving final judgment. Ian Lesser has been listening along with us from Brussels. He's a distinguished fellow with the German Marshall Fund, a public policy think tank that promotes transatlantic relations. Good morning, Ian, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So as we heard, we still don't know the details of the deal. European leaders have welcomed it, but do they have confidence in it?
Well, they have hope. There have been a lot of disappointments along the last months, and I think there's a degree of skepticism in Europe, both about what's been said from Washington, but also, of course, whether Iran can be trusted to stick with the deal, whatever the terms may be. And I think there's a lot of curiosity simply to see what these terms are on points that Europe is very vested in.
What are the main concerns when it comes to the U.S. and Iran from European leaders, especially given that we've seen President Trump say multiple times that a deal is close, that there is a deal, that the war is over, and Iran continually making these really maximalist demands?
Well, actually, I think given all the dispute across the Atlantic about the conflict, I mean, there's a certain irony that European and American concerns about Iran are not all that much different about the nature of the regime, about the nuclear ambitions, ballistic missiles, proxies, etc. The list looks very similar. So I think European officials are going to be interested in seeing, A, whether this comes off, but B, you know, what's the content and can they get some movement on all of those things that are of concern for them, including ballistic missiles, by the way. It's not just the nuclear program. Much of Europe is actually within range ballistic missiles. So they're very concerned about that. They're very concerned about their own energy security and economies. And above all, they want to see the Strait of Hormuz open to shipping again. And they're going to want to know what might be required of them in terms of their own deployments and strategy.
You mentioned Europe's actually in the vicinity of these ballistic missiles. President Trump never consulted with European allies before launching the first airstrikes in Iran. Do leaders in Europe believe anything has been achieved with this months-long war now?
I think there's hope for the ceasefire. They want to get out of this conflict and they want to get back to a normal trade through trade with the Persian Gulf. But you know, there will be a lot of skepticism and a good deal of debate on both sides of the Atlantic, obviously, about what has really been achieved. I mean, you could argue that at the moment we're no better off than we were before the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran, which the Trump administration had originally disavowed. And so, you know, what has really been achieved? Well, we're going to have to see. I mean, there could be very substantial progress on the nuclear file. We'll have to see what that is. A lot of European countries have the capacity to contribute to demining and other kinds of maritime security, but not if there are active hostilities going on. So there's also a lot of concern about where this leaves Europe in terms of its own capabilities to operate outside of its own neighborhood.
One thing that did come out of this war, as you point out, is the closing of the Strait of Hormuz, Iran taking it over, blockading it, the U.S. trying to blockade it back. European allies, including France, Germany, and the U.K., have pledged to provide security in the Strait if and when it reopens in accordance with this deal. Does Europe have the capabilities to follow through there?
Well, as long as it's not under conditions of active hostilities, I think it probably does, and maybe for a long period of time. Many European countries, including quite small allies, have substantial mine warfare capabilities, but not to operate in very high-intensity environments. That requires the United States. And I think one of the concerns will be that if Europe is committing itself to those kinds of operations, whether the United States will be there to help them.
There is a lot of distrust between Washington and Tehran. Could Europe take a role potentially to mediate and hold both sides accountable?
I think there will be some desire to do that. It's not an easy thing to do at the moment, given all the stress in transatlantic relations. But on the other hand, on some questions like how to proceed with Iran's highly enriched uranium, there could well be a role, not just for Europe, but also for multinational organizations, for the International Atomic Energy Agency, for example. Europe is very vested in some of those organizations. So, I think under certain conditions, Europe could play an important diplomatic role still.
Ian Lesser is a distinguished fellow with the German Marshall Fund, and he joined us from Brussels. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There were cheers, there were jeers, and there were protests at Monday night's World Cup game between Iran and New Zealand. NPR's Arzu Rezvani reports from Los Angeles on the 2-2 draw.
Stop execution in Iran!
It was nearly impossible to enter the World Cup stadium last night without encountering protesters. Protesters like 26-year-old Mona Cheshmagil.
I don't have tickets because I didn't want to go to a game where I'm forced to have the regime flag.
Cheshmagil sees Iran's national soccer team as an extension of Iran's government. So last night, whenever she and other protesters spotted Iranians waving the Islamic Republic's flag, they'd let him have it. You're honorless, screamed one woman. A terrorist, yelled another. At one point, those curses were hurled at Ornella Tehrani and her friend, who were carrying an anti-war sign with the number 168. Iranian authorities say that's the number of children killed in an airstrike on a school during the U.S.-Israel war against Iran.
One of the ladies just called us a terrorist as we were walking by. So, you know, my family fled during the revolution. They don't like the current government either. We just want to see Iranians make that decision on their own without U.S. intervention for once.
The jeering continued in the stadium with boos during Iran's national anthem. But once the game started, even those outside the stadium who refused to buy tickets couldn't help but watch.
This group is out for the taking.
Just down the street, a group of anti-regime activists crowded around a TV. They cheered when New Zealand scored the first goal. And were indifferent when Iran scored the equalizer. But as the minutes ticked by, as the players waltzed past each other with New Zealand scoring a second goal, it was hard to hold back pride when Iran stormed back to tie the game again. 66-year-old Banu Vala threw her hands up in the air, then snapped out of it, conflicted. I'm forgetting that it's the Islamic Republic playing, she said. It's becoming a celebration after all. Arzu Rezvani, NPR News, Los Angeles.
Tomorrow on Morning Edition, it's been 26 years since a Mexican film took the Cannes Film Festival by storm. Amores Perros was a sea change in Spanish language cinema. It's now back in theaters, fully remastered. I speak with Golden Globe winning actor and filmmaker Gael Garcia Bernal and two-time Oscar winning director Alejandro González Iñárritu about what was their first film. Tune in on the NPR app or your local station. This is NPR News.
It's 7:19. We've been listening to Morning Edition here on KAXE. Coming up, we've got John Latimer's full phonology report.
We do?
Yeah. Oh. You're ready, right? Wait, I see notes.
I have some things I want to talk about.
Okay.
Right. And I'll let you know what they are when we start the Phenology Show, which is coming right up. So stay tuned. Right now, I want to tell you that we receive support from the Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. And support for KAXE comes from Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Rich Mattson and Jermaine Gremberling, Monday, June 22nd, as part of the Martini Monday Music Series. Music begins at 5 p.m. Reservations at 218-326-2600.
John, you and I were just having a lengthy conversation about last night's Minnesota Lynx game.
Where yes.
They won by quite a bit.
Oh, yes.
Portland yeah. Fire.
Portland's a brand new team, mm-hmm. and they have things to learn, and they'll catch on. But the Lynx are a dominating force right now. My goodness, their new acquisition, their number two draft pick this year, Olivia Miles, has turned out to be, I don't know, Steph Curry in the of the female side. She is absolutely a wizard with the ball, not only shooting but passing. Oh my gosh, it's just it's wonderful. It's exciting to watch her. She's just so much fun. And all the other members of the team, their center now, a woman named Howard. She is like 13 years in the league, and I don't know. This is, you know, having such a good team around her has made her a much better player. She is scoring well above her career average and just grabbing rebounds like crazy. They are absolutely, they're a tough team to play against.
Mm-hmm.
They played against the Aces the other day.
I don't know how anybody wins against the Aces. They have such a stocked team with Asia Wilson and Chelsea Gray, and I mean, are they so good? But the Lynx almost did it.
You know what? I think that anyone who faces the Lynx thinks the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
How do we play against them? They have so many weapons.
Yeah.
If we cover Olivia, we're going to give up shots to Williams. If we cover Williams, we're going to give up shots to Olivia Miles. If we cover those two, there's McBride.
Yeah.
Everybody can shoot and pass, and they're fun to watch.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you talked about Natasha Howard. So exciting to see her at this point in her career and be back. She was once on the Minnesota Lynx team, and she's back, and she's become a superstar. She's just reliable and down there at the basket and fights through it all and gets them in.
Yeah, and last night, I think it was Olivia Miles that came down and missed a layup, had a breakaway, missed a layup, and Howard was the only other player down there. And when it missed, it fell right in her hands, and she just put it back. And, you know, the commentators even said, you know, where are the Portland players? How come nobody was chasing her down the court?
Yeah. They were getting so many rebounds, and, they just were playing well. So we recommend you check out the Minnesota Lynx, team to be proud of.
And you tipped me off. Mm-hmm. There is a free app called Victory Plus.
Yep.
And you can load it. You end up having to put in your email address, but they haven't flooded me with a bunch of unrequested, they just, they welcome, there's a little note in the corner says, welcome back, John, and I get to watch the games, and so it's really
pretty,
quite nice.
Yeah, it's pretty easy, and it's a good way to see it.
So if you're not seeing them, and, you know, they play occasionally on the public airwaves, CBS, for example, and so you can occasionally see them, but if you go to Victory Plus, if you have one of those smart TV things, and believe me, I'm speaking from not a smart position, because I was out with Scott Hall and Matt Miltich the other day, and between the three of us, we're lucky we can actually just turn our phones on. God. We did not grow up in technological world. You know, we all three of us were, when we were at seniors in high school, the mathematical tool of use was the slide rule. So we are pre-calculator, and that's how old we are. But yeah, it was a great time. And this Victory Plus thing, I did it myself.
Yeah.
So believe me, it can be done.
That's right.
You have to.
Now I gave Scott the same advice. I wonder if he got it.
I hope so.
I do too, because yeah. I know he loves the links. But yeah, it's an easy way. I think you can even go back and watch past games too.
Yes, you can.
So, right. Kind of cool.
Yeah. KAXE receives support from the Kix Band of Fargo-Moorhead, hosting a summer jazz camp at Moorhead State University from July 6th through the 9th and the 27th through the 30th. This camp is open to students of all ages with at least 2 years of playing experience, exploring jazz improvisation, ear training, and live performance in beginner through advanced groups. Through a grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board, students traveling and staying in hotels may qualify for a 2/3 discount for tuition. More information and registration at fmkicksband-dot-com. Is that the way it's written that way? I don't know if that's the address or if it's kicksband.com. So
yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yep. I think it's just fmkicksband.com.
All right. Well, hey. Try them both ways, and if you get the wrong address, why, you can blame me. You can send me an email, or I don't know.
Hey, what do you say we get away from technology and talk nature?
I couldn't be happier to do that. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And there are a couple of things I wanted to cover right off the bat. And the first one didn't really come to me until this morning as I was coming in and I was listening to the Daily Dose of Phenology. And in that piece, I talked about a science experiment that I did with some students. And we went out into a patch of milkweed and we rounded up a bunch of eggs and caterpillars. And we brought them in and we raised them and we counted how many and how big, and we looked them over, and the thrust of it, and this was, I think, 1999, or I can't recall the year, but it was a while back at any rate. And at the end of the Daily Dose of Phenology, if you hear it today, you'll hear me lament the fact that there doesn't seem to be a lot of monarchs around. And this year, I want to tell you that there are a fair number of monarchs around, and I've been seeing them pretty regularly. They are laying eggs. I got a nice note from Betty Harrison, and she told me that she had 9 caterpillars on her milkweed plants now, and one had already gone into chrysalis. And this is going to be, so if you're watching the monarchs, you're going to see a few in the next week or so, and then there'll be a short pause where you won't see any, because those that came back from migration have laid their eggs and are dying and will die, and those eggs then have to go through about a 30-day, it's like 15 days as a caterpillar and 15 days in the chrysalis, and then you'll emerge as a butterfly, as a monarch butterfly. So midsummer, starting in early July, you should start seeing more monarchs again, and then the same thing will happen one more time. And then in August, you will see, toward the end of August, you'll see the next group of monarch butterflies, and that's the group that will fly down to Mexico. So there will be the generation that comes here on migration, then there's the generation that occurs here over the summer, then there's the generation that occurs in the fall that flies to Mexico. And that group will fly back to Kansas or Oklahoma or Iowa or someplace like that, and they will lay their eggs there, and those are the ones that will be back here next year in late May. And that's a four-generation procedure there that we just went through. So my feeling today is that monarchs have been up and have been down and are coming back up a little bit right now. And part of that is your good work, because a lot of you are becoming aware of monarchs, are concerned about monarchs, and are making sure that they have the plants that they need for the nectar and the defense, that is milkweed, that they need to make themselves unpalatable. And all of that is because we are becoming more aware of it. We are doing a better job of preserving those things, and we're helping out the monarchs as a result. So good news on the monarch front. Whew. Okay. Now, the other thing that I wanted to tell you, because we had a lot of wind this last week, and if you were driving anywhere, you probably saw a lot of the undersides of leaves on trees and shrubs. And in botany, when you're looking up a plant, oftentimes if you're trying to figure out what plant you're looking at, one of the things they'll tell you is that the upper surface of the leaf is smooth and dark green and the undersurface is white and covered in hairs. That's only one example. I mean, there can be a thousand different combinations. But the underside of the leaf is often revelatory as to the species. And one of the species that really, really, really jumps out at me as I'm driving along are the balsam poplars. Now, balsam poplars almost always grow near water. They are members of the popple family. They have absolutely no value as pulp or lumber. They grow in these weedy, wet areas. They are seldom more than 60 years old. That would be an old one. But the leaves are reddish on the underside. And when the wind blows from the right direction and those leaves get tipped up and you're driving along, you're going to see these reddish-looking trees. And those are the balsam poplars. So one example of how sometimes seeing the underside of the leaf will help you to make some decisions about what plant you're looking at. Look for the red, and you will be, it's actually a brown, I suppose. But if you look for that color, you will be tuning yourself into the balsam poplars, which almost always are going to be in the ditches along the road as you drive. I put together a list of plants that are in flower right now or just about to flower, and it's a lot longer than I thought it would be, but it includes pineapple weed, which is one of my favorites for a lot of reasons. One is that when we were kids, we didn't even know it was called pineapple weed, but it has this little flower head that looks like a little plug, like maybe the end of a 22, just kind of rounded and short. And if you pick one of those flower heads and put it up by your nose, crush it and put it by your nose, you'll get a really strong smell of pineapple. The interesting thing about this plant is that it grows in the worst possible conditions. It grows in the middle of my driveway, and my driveway is 3/10 of a mile long. It's gravel. It's basically, you would call it a two-track, because there's a patch of grass down the middle, and then the two tracks where the car tires run. And in that patch down the middle, where very little should grow at all, is pineapple weed. And I was at a baseball game this Sunday and walking down the street in Minneapolis, and in the crack of the concrete next to a building, there was a patch of pineapple weed. And my nephew was with me, and I picked one and I gave it to him and I said, crush this and smell it. This is pineapple weed. And he was like, wow, that's really good. I can tell you that when I was a kid, there was more than one occasion when I had to find something to reach up my nostril and pull one of those back out, because they will fit up your nose. I've never actually worked one all the way around to my throat, but I have had them pulled out of my nose before. So pineapple weed is just starting to bloom up here, and in the cities it was right at the end of its blooming period. But it comes and goes. It'll bloom now, and then it'll reconvene and bloom again later this summer. You'll see lots of it. Raspberry are in bloom, and the raspberry flowers are not very showy. And so you're gonna have to walk up to the raspberries. What you'll notice are lots of bumblebees moving around and gathering the nectar from the raspberry flowers. Blackberry are also in flower, and those are those big, like inch and a quarter white flowers that are everywhere right now. Blackberry was a couple days late getting started, but boy, once it got going, it is everywhere, and it's probably at its peak of bloom around here. The fact that there are lots of flowers doesn't mean there'll be lots of fruits. Blackberries are quickly hybridize with other blackberries, and often the result is incomplete flowers and or incomplete fruits. Every once in a while, you'll find a patch of blackberries that's nice and fully fruited, and if you're lucky enough and that happens to you, pick them and enjoy them, because they're not as common as the flowers. The fruits are much harder to find than the flowers. Smooth vetch, that's that little purple pea-like flower that's blooming. Canada milk vetch is blooming. The rose, the smooth rose, began to bloom last week on Tuesday or Monday. And it, I had notes from a friend up in Ely. Sue sent me a note. Her roses had been blooming for a week before ours bloomed. Ours were 5 days late by my count. A friend of mine, Kyle, is working up at Spruce, and they bloomed up there about a week before they bloomed down here in Grand Rapids. It's one of those flowers, a bit like blueberry, in that it flowers from the north coming south. A bit odd that way, but the roses are probably approaching their peak of bloom right now. Bunchberry is blooming. This is shrub. It belongs to the dogwood family. It's going to be right shrub, not right. It's a 4 to 6 inch tall plant on the ground. Bunchberry, big white flowers, actually petals, sepals, not flowers, but they are pretty easily identified. There are four of them, and they are quite large and white, and about 6 inches tall, and usually in big clumps. Blue flag, the wild iris, was blooming, or actually I found a flower bud yesterday. That's 11 days late, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just the area I'm looking, but that's what's happened to my blue flag. Blue-eyed grass is blooming. This one, I don't know what to tell you, except that if you're walking along, and I've seen them on road edges, I've seen them in fields, you'll see these five-petaled blue flowers with a bright yellow center, and the flower is about 3/4 of an inch across. Blue-eyed grass. It's a lovely, lovely flower and well worth checking out if you happen to be wandering around in a grassy area. And like I say, it can be right along the edge of the road, and sometimes it's, you know, just out in the middle of a field. There's another flower that's blooming at my house out in the middle of the field, and it is called Maiden Pink. And it is pink. It is shocking pink. It is bright, bright, bright pink. And clumps of it all over the edge of the field. And it grows in really sandy soil with almost no protection from the sun. Where I find it is in full sun. And it runs along this fence row, and there's probably 1/4 mile of it, of just this patch after patch of these bright pink flowers. It is gorgeous. Canada anemone is blooming. You may be familiar with the wood anemone. Canada anemone is taller. It is the same basic plant. It's got a big white flower at the top. And it grows like all the anemones, where it has a whorl of leaves and then a stalk that supports the flower up high. So check those out as well. Lupin is blooming. Lupin is, for some people, it's invasive. I tried really hard to get some to grow at my house, but I had no luck. I find it in the ditches, usually places where somebody probably has planted it. And it can spread. So in some areas, it's looked on as, as I look at hawkweed, which is also blooming right now. That's that yellow flower that is everywhere right now. Probably mouse-eared hawkweed. And the other one is the orange hawkweed. That's the one that's sometimes called the devil's paintbrush. It's two-toned orange, dark orange around the outside, bright orange in the center. Orange hawkweed. All of the hawkweeds are invasive. All of them, I see people leave big patches of them because they like them. The farmers hate them. Cows will not eat hay with hawkweed in it. They don't like them. They're very hairy and I think difficult for the cows to ingest and get down. Spreading dogbane has just begun to bloom. These are those tall plants, 3 feet tall. Red stem, green leaf, white flower, kind of a pink bell-shaped flower. Really pretty, really popular with all of the butterflies. Common fleabane. If you come across a flower that looks like a daisy, except that it's got 50 petals on it, it's going to be about a half inch across, pink. It's going to have a yellow center and about 50 rays sticking out from the edges. That is fleabane. And the one that's blooming right now is called common or Philadelphia fleabane. And the way you'll recognize it is if you find that little flower I'm talking about, look at the leaf and you'll see that the base of the leaf sort of wraps around the stem. And that's called clasping. The leaf sort of clasps the stem. And that's how you know that you're looking at common fleabane or Philadelphia fleabane. Showy lady slippers began to bloom this past week, as did sweet Sicily. Bird's foot trefoil was blooming last Tuesday when I talked to you. Yarrow is blooming. White campion is blooming. Canada Mayflower is about done blooming. Hepatica is done blooming. I found what I think is probably the last of the nodding trilliums blooming. I mentioned to Heidi earlier we were talking about monarch butterflies. Two other butterflies I've seen this past week. Well, I saw several, but I saw the Hobomoke skipper, which is a little orange butterfly, about 3/4 inch across. And then a white admiral, which is a large black butterfly with a very white band through its wings. The mourning cloak, which is often confused with this one, is black or dark brown, and its band is on the edge of the wing, and it is more cream colored than the white admiral's pure white one. The other butterfly that you're going to see right now, and probably only for another week or so, is the Canada tiger swallowtail, or just the tiger swallowtail, that big yellow and black butterfly that accompanies the monarchs. The swallowtail emerges from chrysalis about the time that the monarch arrives from migration, and they will be flying around for a while, and then they're going to disappear, and we won't see them again until next spring. I also found spittle bugs this last week, and if you find a gob of spit on a plant, don't be afraid. Just go up and smear it off on your fingers and smear it around, and you'll find a little green bug in the middle, and that's going to be the spittle bug. I had a moment with the bald eagle that I have to recount, because for the last 3 weeks or so, since leaf out, I have been unable to see the nest from the house, and I haven't been able to notice whether or not the adults are coming in and feeding the young one, and I had thought maybe I don't have a young one, maybe it perished. But yesterday I was out walking, and I walked by the nest, and standing on the edge of the nest, high and proud, was a young juvenile bald eagle, not yet fledged, but boy, I'll tell you, I was washed with relief. And I recalled Mark Twain's famous remark, "The report of my death was an exaggeration." And that's the actual quote. Many of us learned it as something else. The rumors of my demise were greatly exaggerated, but he actually said the report of my death was an exaggeration. And in the case of this bald eagle, it was also an exaggeration, and I couldn't be happier. I feel like a proud grandfather. That's our phenology show for this week. Sorry to blather on so long, but boy, it's summertime and there's lots to talk about, as you well know if you're outside at all.
Coming up next, we've got best wishes and then more phenology talkbacks, more messages and emails from you about what you are seeing. You can always text us as well, 218-326-1234.
KAXC receives support from North in Bloom, located in downtown Grand Rapids, providing floral arrangements for all occasions and holidays throughout the year. Also offering wedding consultations, flower subscriptions, and gift sets. More information at northinbloom.com. And programming on KAXE KBXE is supported in part by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them. Introducing the 2026 Bush Fellows, leaders working to make the region better for everyone. More information is online at bushfoundation.org.
We're expecting partly sunny skies today with highs 67 to 72, northwest winds 10 to 20, and a chance of showers tonight, mostly cloudy. Temperatures in the mid-40s to low 50s across the region. West winds could be up to 20 miles an hour. And tomorrow, Wednesday, good chance for showers with possible thunderstorms.
West winds at 20. Look for those balsam poplars on your drive. Support comes from the Loft Event Center in downtown Bemidji, providing a multi-purpose event space that accommodates groups of all sizes, up to 150 people, for wedding receptions, business meetings, concerts, and more. Info about the Loft Event Center rates and packages at BemidjiLodge.com. It's time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. For you, today, June 16th, we send out a happy anniversary to Roland and Janice Root, who are celebrating their 53rd anniversary in Hibbing. Way to go. Nice number. And Tom Matei is 67 today. It is his birthday. He lives in Duluth. Isaiah Myers has a 19th birthday today. Happy birthday to Isaiah. And Brian Jamber is having a birthday. You may recognize Brian's name. He's been a member of KAXE for a long time and also has done work with us.
That's right.
He's in Bemidji.
We also got a text in. Fred from Hackensack says, please wish a happy birthday to my pal Jim Culpepper on Stony Lake today. See you at Rendezvous Trivia tonight.
All right. Happy birthday to you and Stony Lake. I don't want to walk barefoot in that one.
No. We're going to listen to our album of the week. It's by Dwayne Betts. Dwayne is the son of Dickie Betts, the founding member of the Allman Brothers. And this is a new album from him. It's called Isle of Hope, and it's a deeply personal collection. Let's take a listen.
Passing towns and the people I meet. The song in my heart I sing with sympathy. Summer storm is after me. Red dirt under my feet on a silver afternoon in July. Sometimes the dark just feels right.
That's our album of the week by Dwayne Betts. It's called Isle of Hope. It's out on Sun Records. Betts worked with Americana super producer Dave Cobb on this one. You can find more information at KAXE.org. And listen in for more of our album of the week during Headwaters. It's coming up at 9 o'clock with your host, Malachi Coons.
We receive support from Sanford Bemidji Orthopedics and Sports Medicine Center, specializing in total joint repair. More at sanfordhealth.org. And we receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Up next, we've got more Phenology Talkbacks. Funding for Talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund and produced by Charlie Mitchell.
Our next report comes from a young lady whom I met a year ago while swimming, and we were talking about frogs. And her mother was a member and a fan. And so Kalina and Zeta have submitted another report. This is Zeta Bebo with a phenology report for us.
Today is June 14th, 2026, Saturday.
Sunday.
And I see the real crayfish. I never saw a real crayfish. It's blue, tan, and it's white, too. It probably is coming back.
And where are we at?
And where we are at is at my... Where we were going camping, Aunt Michelle.
And Pingilly.
See you soon.
Oxide Creek. Tell them.
Yep, Oxide Stream.
Oxide Stream. The crack.
Hey, what's your name?
Zeta. And this is my phenology report. Thank you.
Thank you, Zeta. Always nice to hear your voice. And a crayfish. They are amazing. Now, Zeta, just between you and me, don't tell your mom that I told you to do this, but if you catch a crayfish, put your finger in his pinchers, but put him way down. Put your whole finger way down at the bottom of his pinchers, and you'll find out that he can't pinch very hard. But if he catches you with the tips of his pinchers on just a little bit of your skin, it will make you scream. So be careful. But crayfish are fun. They're amazing little animals. And do you notice how they run backwards when they're excited and want to get away? They back up really fast. Yeah. Thank you, Zeta. Good to hear your voice. Our next report is from the teachers at the Phenology Investigations in Minnesota Schools workshop in Spicer.
Hello, this is Melissa, Ben, and Kristen reporting from the observation deck in Prairie Woods on June 13th. Today we noticed...
Today's weather is breezy, mostly sunny, and a comfortable 68 degrees Fahrenheit.
The landscape is really greened up due to recent rain. We notice many plants in different stages of bloom. Sumac and black raspberry are in early fruiting. Some clover is going to seed, and yarrow has started to bloom.
Dragonflies and damselflies were especially active today. Tree swallow chicks have hatched and are developing feathers. Our highlight today was observing coyote poop in the middle of the trail with at least 3 dung-dabbling beetles.
This has been Melissa, Ben, and Kristen reporting from the Observation Deck of Prairie Woods, dealing out the latest cards from the Observation Deck. Have a great day.
Hey, thank you. That was a nice report. Sumac and black raspberry, definitely blooming. Some clover is going to seed already. I noticed that the red clover at my house was just starting to bloom, and yarrow, of course, is blooming in this area as well. Tree swallow chicks coming out. I haven't seen any fledging yet, but I have some in the nest boxes along my road, and coyote scat in the middle of the trail, and dung beetles. Nice observations. Thank you so much for your report. And our next report comes from Dan Winkler, who teaches at Caledonia High School in Well, Caledonia. Although it's not technically summer, according to the calendar, it sure feels like summer here. Over the past week, we had extreme humidity that feels like the temperatures into the 90s and close to 100. My neighborhood robin is in her second nest of the season, already with spring fledglings fending for themselves. In town, are chimney swifts and common nighthawks ever turned, making lots of chatter throughout the day? I believe the nighthawks are resting on the flat-topped roofs in the downtown area. On the prairie bluffs, pale spiked lobelia is in full bloom, and Coreopsis is just beginning to put on its show. The needlegrass, porcupine grass, has set seed with violet flowers, and oxalis, pasque flowers, and prairie smoke have already seeded. Some of the first tiny acorns are forming on the white oaks, still waiting to see if it will be a mast year or not. I also have some first woodpecker fledglings of the year. Harry and Downy have been feeding young in the tree cavities. Common grackles are also feeding fledgling young. Purple martins along the river have found their colonial roost boxes and have become very active. We also have seen timber rattlesnake sheds this week. Timber rattlesnakes are very rare. Those guys are there. They live in the only part of the state that has the timber rattlesnake, and the timber rattlesnake itself are very, very rare. So that was, they were lucky to find those. He invites us to, if we have questions for him, for that area of the state, to send them along. So if you have questions about the southeastern corner of Minnesota, by all means, get in touch with us. We will happily pass those questions down to Dan and hopefully get some answers. Our last report comes from Dave McMillan, who is sending this in from Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade. This is the phenology report from the Long Lake Conservation Center for June 6th through the 13th. High temperature was 85 degrees with a low of 50. Several snapping turtles were seen looking for places to lay eggs along the road to Long Lake Kent Conservation Center. After a failed nesting, the two loons are back on the lake together. They are very curious when the Canada Goose family is on the shore of the lake, swimming in close to see what is going on. Fawns have been spotted, toddling around in the forest and curled up on the forest floor. In the bog, sundew and cinnamon ferns are up. Blooming in the bogs are Labrador tea and pitcher plants. There are also a few blue flag iris, and the pink lady slippers are still holding on. Also in bloom are blackberry, yellow pond lilies, and wild roses. The ticks have slowed a bit, and the chalk-fronted corporal dragonflies and deerflies have increased in numbers. We found woolly aphids on the alder saplings and noticed many bubbly cocoons of the spittlebugs. It's a great time to explore nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected. Thanks, Dave, for that note from Long Lake, and thank you all for all of your notes. Heidi, have you notes that have come in over the transom while we were floating about here?
Couple of comments. Just Liberty from Faustin saying that was the cutest phenology report.
Oh, Zeta, yeah. God.
And Susan from Cotton was saying, thank you, John, for a real belly laugh over we are lucky we can turn our phones on, on our phones. I startled Chico, it's her dog, on second walks. And please blather on. Our driveway mirrors yours, and now I know who those silly, tenacious middle row plants are.
Nice. Thank you, Susan. Nice to hear from all of you. It is a pleasure to bring you phenology and to hear from you and to let me know that you are enjoying nature as much as I do. I every day, it's just an adventure. I go outside filled with hope and wonder and wander around and marvel at everything that occurs. It's just a great time to be outside. We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. More online at hottubsmn.com.
Thanks.
Thanks
also goes out to Lady Sippers and a bottle shop in downtown Deer River, offering ready